without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Cliff, who does not want me to call him Dr. Sarin. So, Cliff, who is with the UC Davis Mind Institute, and I'll let you actually do a little more introduction of yourself, either at the presentation time or now, it seems.
So it's the Center for Mind and Brain and the Mind Institute.
Okay.
So those are two separate centers at UC Davis, one the Mind Institute, which is focused on research on autism and developmental disabilities. It's actually an acronym, Medical Investigation of Neurodevelopmental Disorders. The Center for Mind and Brain, which is in Davis, at off campus. So I'm just thrilled and overwhelmed to have a full house interested in spending an hour together to consider what it might be to meditate. And the structure of this evening is going to unfold in a very informal way during this first hour, which is going to be some talking, some practice, some asking for input from you, responses from me. And then we'll move, take a break for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll move into the formal presentation, and then there'll be questions for about half an hour after that, and then it'll be about 8:30. So let me ask you, who here is new to meditation? That's wonderful. Who here is not new to meditation? That's also wonderful. So it'll be very interesting to have responses from both these camps as we proceed. I'm not a professional meditation teacher. My training is in neuroscience and scientific research. But I've been around contemplative practice for some time and done a little, and find that it's enormously interesting to communicate, informed by the view of what it is to do research on these practices, a view of these practices that don't come particularly from religious tradition, but just sort of a more based in a common sense approach of what it might be like to pay attention to investigating your own minds. That's kind of the ground from which I want to proceed. But in order to prepare that ground, we also need to examine intentionality and motivation. So I want to begin with asking you each quietly in your own way to simply note what your intention is in coming to this section of the program this evening. Do you have any expectations of what you might get out of it? Do you have any goals that we might not fulfill? Other goals that we might? This word meditation is really, in this culture, fraught. There is no such thing per se. The Hindu root for meditation, bhavana, means cultivate. The Tibetan word gom means familiarize. So cultivating and familiarizing are the root elements that comprise this effort that in this culture we call meditation. There are many different ways to spend time in stillness, having some technique to do. Doing a meditative technique is not necessarily meditating. It might be rotely following an instruction, but not having a sense of investigation. So I'd relabel this hour as investigating your mind. Now, how do we begin to do that? Much of our time is focused on where we are in our to-do list of the day. And we're either on point, or more typically, we are lagging behind. And we're lagging behind because we put things on our to-do list without knowing what was entailed in doing them. And circumstances constantly arise in which we are embedded in a matrix of interdependencies about which we cannot control, but which we wish to control. So is there a way to take the to-do list and have the things on the to-do list begin to float? You know, Keynote on the Mac, if those of you use the Mac, you can have all these wonderful fluidic typography where a word can just kind of ripple across the screen. Is it possible to have an attitude about our daily agenda and enmeshment with expectations of ourselves and others' expectations of ourselves that becomes more spacious? Is that something that might be of interest? Would that change your quality of life enormously? Could be. How can you move from being enmeshed in the to-do list to simply holding it as an evolving, organic phenomenon that's simply our best guess of reality? I mean, what possibly could you do? Well, one thing you could do is observe the assumptions that you make when you make commitments. And you could observe, if you can keep in mind, the prior commitments that you've already made when you make new commitments. That's how we get overscheduled, overprogrammed. And the society rewards people who are always willing to take something else on. The adage, if you want something done, ask a busy person. So, across the life cycle, this could result in a lot of productivity, a lot of acquisition, a lot of skill development, a lot of notoriety, progress, achievement. But at some point, it feels less sustainable. So maybe there's a slow burn way to move forward in our roles in the world. How can we do that? One thing that relates to why I am here, don't know why you're here, is the notion that we can become in place in any situation grateful for the fact of existence. Full stop. Each of us is a metabolizing, self-organizing, macromolecular miracle. Walking around with 3.5 odd billion years of experimentation done by the forces of nature on this planet, not to mention wherever else we might have been seeded from. And how often do you stop to think that simply being able to breathe, simply being able to metabolize a delicious meal, to have your liver process this delicious alcohol, is a mind-blowing reality? And the fact that we are endowed with a capacity to relate to each other by having a a way that the world of others impacts on us so that we can communicate? Extraordinary. So in the service of this kind of awe of just simple existence can grow a motivation to feel like when you stop, you become aware of the miracle of existence. And in fact, you're not stopping at all. You can investigate the quality of your mind by paying attention to your experience, the way you attend to so many things in your daily life. So, when you go shopping, and you're going to choose the tomato that you want to put in your bag, or the pineapple that's the right ripeness, or some avocado that is not too squishy. You attend to nuances of the quality of fruit that often we don't attend to that quality of how we're feeling. We pay more attention to what's the best fruit I'm going to buy, then how am I feeling right now? And how do I want to act on as a function of the feedback I'm getting from my body state, from the thoughts I'm having? But you all know how to pick really good fruit. You've learned this since you were a kid. If you walk down the hall and there's a picture frame that's slightly tilted, you stop and you carefully measure it with your I, you step back, you attend it, you make an adjustment. That simple, direct attention, you can engage internally. And when you engage it internally, you may perceive other things that might feel out of kilter. And then you might think, how can I write this? What are the ripe fruit in my own mind and body? So that's the framework under which I've come here to sort of engage in a investigation of whether it's possible in this form of communication to get a little quieter, more relaxed, and more self-nourishing. That's the point of this time together. Self-nourishment. So I could say all these words, but you sort of say, well, what do you do? How do you do this? Well, one of the most common techniques to begin a period of meditation practice is to simply sit up erect. So we can do this. Loosen belts, buckles, if you wish to. Plant your feet firmly on the ground. And just rest your hands either on your knees or with your left hand nestled in your right hand, fingers not interlocked. Just feel the chair supporting you, the floor supporting you, and the ongoing flux of existence happening. And in this predicament, this posture, perhaps you can notice that you're breathing. See if you can feel your diaphragm expanding on the in-breaths, exhaling, contracting on out-breaths. The goal here is not to change your breathing. The goal is to observe. And see if you can bring your awareness to the tip of your nostrils, feeling the warmth of the air as it goes out, the coolness as it goes in. So if you've closed your eyes, you can open them. That was just a little beginning starter moment. So this is one foundational initial point of departure. You're doing this, but you find that you begin to think. Welcome to the rest of humanity and every meditating person. People think meditation means no thoughts. Not true. Many people think, I can't meditate because I'm thinking. I'm distracted by thoughts. The phrase meditation practice means that there's something you actually are going to do repetitively. And the basic practice is waking up from distraction with gentleness and not going, oh shit, I was thinking. I should be paying attention to my breath. But to simply actually say, thought, or if emotion comes up, you can label it, or you can simply hold the sensation and know it, and without yanking your attention back to the point of breath attention, you really just take a moment to behold the awareness of that which distracted you. This particular moment of gentleness with being off task is among the most critical elements of the practice. Because that's the moment of nourishment. That's the moment you don't judge yourself harshly because you are not following instructions. That's among the most critical things to say yes to. That you dedicate yourself to gentleness before you bring your attention back to the breath. We are in the habit of yanking our attention. We're in the habit of judging being off point. Because being off point presupposes there's a point. And there's our to-do list again. So there are relative agendas. There are systematic movements forward. But if they are clung to too tenaciously, suffering results and inefficiency results. So Now let's do another 2 minutes of breath meditation, practicing gentleness if your mind wanders and you bring it back. Sit up, hands in lap, find your breath. Engagement a little more conceptual. These two aspects of focusing your attention and essentially self-compassion, loving-kindness, the wish to nourish yourself, they form a good platform for an essential restoration. They also provide the opportunity for this investigation. So while you're holding this kind of posture, you're attending to the breath, sensations in the body, being gentle with yourself, you may be able to observe some things that heretofore you have not seen. You may be able to observe that you are not your thoughts. You may be able to have the experiential insight that there is an invariance to the quality of your experience known as your ongoing consciousness, your awareness. And there is content that fluxes. Some of that content is sensory experience, the sound of the fan of the projector, my voice in the background. And sometimes it's memories, images. And sometimes it's discursive thoughts, the voice in your head you take to be you. It's a habit. You know, it can stop. but you don't disappear when it stops. There's quiet, there's spaciousness, there's awareness, there's sensitivity, there's a whole sensorium of your embodied reality, present in the quietness that can arise spontaneously. That is the paper upon which the to-do list is written. That changes, potentially, values. Often we need extreme experience to bring us to this point. Sometimes through illness, sometimes through great loss, sometimes through profound exhaustion, sometimes through an encounter with beauty or in love, or there are any number of ways one can get access to a moment like this. But typically people don't have, in their daily set of life skills, the habit to check in with the nature of your own reality. That's a deeper level of this practice. It doesn't require cushions and a puja table and hour-long commitments every day, or voyages to retreat centers, or any particular garb of almost any particular stripe. It only requires this move of attention to your internal world, something you've been doing since you were born. It's as portable as your life. Any questions?
When you were talking before the first meditation session about paying attention to the flux, what exactly, was your awareness of? Was it sensing?
It can be many different things. So if you are not talking and you're observing, you know, the sensations, just the sensations of breath are not blocky. So if you hear, if you feel the sensation of, so that's almost like white noise. That's actually not just one thing. There is, even in a single breath, there is the velocity change of airflow. There is the somatic sensation of where are you in the arc of this particular sine wave. There is the pause between the out-breath and the in-breath. There is the subtle intentionality to inhale. There is the slight relief that your lungs, having filled with air, wish to expel, and the slight vacuum or the sense of paucity that you wish to fill after the end. I'm just talking riffing about just feeling the breath, not to mention thoughts in the background, the environment, signals from your body on the chair.
What I hear you saying is we're used to thinking in terms of things, and what I heard you say was that if we pay attention, we can feel them changing.
You better said than I.
I was the one asking a question. I really didn't know.
Well, you got the answer. Any other questions?
In the breath.
Yeah.
Do you prefer inhaling through the mouth and exhaling through the nose, or vice versa, or is there a difference?
There's probably a difference. I don't particularly care. Do you feel differently one way or the other? This now is a question of techniques that might be from different traditions. We can go all the way to which nostril are you breathing out of, you know, or generally speaking, you know, you're getting better filtration if you inhale through the nose, and you might have more distinct sensation of warmth by using your palate, soft palate, and your mouth to feel it. But it's, you know, depends how your nasal passages are working and what you're comfortable with. This would be, you know, there are hundreds of techniques of what to do in this quiet time. And they often come from traditions with claims, do it this way, not that way, because it's my teacher told me to do that, or whatever. But I don't have an answer. What do you feel better doing?
Where did you cool your breath? It seems like it's cooler inhaling through the mouth than through the nose.
Yeah, but your nasal passages do a better job getting the pollutants out. That's why we got our mucous membrane. Any other anatomical questions? So let's go. Yes, there's a question.
So I'm a beginner. I was one of the ones who raised my hand, but I never went to it. But my experience after your direction is brought me back to something that I've done many times, and it's my mind is wandering. And it feels very nourishing. I'm jumping from thought to thought. I'm not yanking myself back. Experience that I've had recently, things that might be coming up, it's going from the future to the past and back. It feels great. Is that an experience of meditation for me?
Yes. So there are a couple of things that you can play with that, because we are designed to do mental time travel. And when given the space, you know, the task of life is fractal. That's a really odd sentence, but I'll try to unpack it. We are embedded in so many kinds of agendas that we have multiple tasks running all the time. You came here, but you've got other responsibilities later. You've got stuff that you didn't finish that your mind's going to. You've been actually granted the space for your mind to wander. And as part of that, in the beginning, absolutely, a mind is a wandering mind for the most part. So that's just fine. And if we did this in an all-day retreat setting where you're going to walk slowly potentially and then sit for 40 minutes and then walk and sit, this would kind of wind down. It would kind of expunge itself, because you'd kind of get tired of your mind bopping around and it would just settle a little bit. At the same time, do you think you can find an intentionality to look for the sensation of the breath? Or is the breath too distal in your sensory awareness? If I asked you to, you know, hold a glass of water and feel the weight of the water, would that be more something you could tune into? Because I am talking about some effortful attention that's the right level of effort. Is the pencil sharp that you're holding? Does the pen draw an even line? How would you know that? It's kind of like if you were going to watch, you know, butter melt in a warm plate. These are, you know, 10th grade chemistry. You know, how many things can you say about a candle? I remember with one of our exercises. So as a complement to the mind wandering, there's also an agreement that there is an element of task to this situation to try to focus. And if you can focus on one breath, just find one, then there'll be maybe a shift in the bopping. And you'll actually have more thoughts within a stream that will allow for creative expression. I'm not saying thoughts are bad. I'm simply saying there's a balance. And where this becomes really important is in rumination, if you are strewn with regret, if you feel something has happened that you have not resolved, and you have repetitive thoughts, and those thoughts are associated with negative emotion, you can actually release around those thoughts by the knowledge, the experiential knowledge that you are not those thoughts. This is kind of decentering. There's a whole clinical tradition of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy that, in fact, clinically shows that it prevents the relapse of depression. These techniques that I'm talking about are widely deployed in multiple sectors of society. But there is this investigative element that you might want to try to grab a hold of, you know? It's a tow rope, and they could be a lot of distance between where you can grab on, but see if you can grab a hold of a couple, just for a few breaths. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's sit a little more. This will be our long 10-minute meditation. And then we can talk a little bit at the end. So we began with focused attention. We moved to self-nourishing gentleness. Now we move to the fragility and preciousness of life itself. We move to viscerally holding the miracle of our existence. Qua our existence. This can allow you to feel the profound aesthetic of your own self-nourishing capacity. That's my intentionality for these next 10 minutes. last few minutes, see if you can attend with ever more care to each breath, with ever more gentleness to each distraction. We have a few minutes for some remarks, questions, sharing your experience. Yes?
How does one prevent oneself from sort of dozing off?
It's absolutely common, and often you can't. And one of the things, like the to-do list, is our chronic sleep deprivation. So when you actually give yourself time during the day to get really quiet, you could feel how tired you are and your body would like to nap. If you feel really, really tired and you want to stay awake, one of the things you can do when you're going to fall asleep, if you're trying to meditate, is stand up. Because then if you fall asleep, you'll just be wake the rest of us really up. It's very, very common, and with practice, you can note the outlines and the armature of what exhaustion really feels like, and you can investigate the sensations of tiredness. Where is tiredness in your body? Is it a subtle headache? Is it you just sort of feel that you can reapply attention to the sensation of getting sleepy, and you will wake up a little more. You become interested in fatigue. It's paradoxical, but you know, there are multiple things going on. Often if you go to a retreat and you come from your busy sleep-deprived life, you may find that you just sleep for, you know, 12 hours a day for the first few days. And then on the third or fourth day, you feel rested for the first time in years. So it's really important not to get too judgmental about falling asleep. The other side of things is sometimes psychological material comes up or becomes available that is difficult, and we tend to go unconscious about it. And that's a different kind of fatigue. Other questions? Yeah?
I was having trouble with the intentionality of the focusing on the cliff underneath existence. It was hard enough to breathe in and breathe out.
That's fine. I'm just, you know, got an hour, and I'm kind of compressing a lifetime into an hour. There's no problem with that.
What is it?
What is what?
Experiencing the profundity in the meditation. I mean, how do you get there?
That is, if there was an answer to that, there would, you know, this is what every self-help book wants, you know, every spiritual book wants to purport to communicate. That is as many paths as beings. And it can be as simple as, you know, beholding your loved ones as beginning a letter to a long-lost friend, just walking in the woods. I mean, that's a question. Be a good practice question. No need to answer that now.
This is a nice way out.
Yeah. So because I'm supposed to start a lecture in 3 minutes, you guys should talk amongst yourselves and get some more wine or whatever. And thank you so much for your attention.